6 months after the broadcast, the derelict was no longer a secret. It was a destination. Dr. Kira Osei had been on site for 11 weeks, running the IAU's primary research station 200 meters from the ancient structure's hull. 11 weeks of spectral analysis and electromagnetic mapping, and the slow, meticulous work of cataloging, something that defied every framework she'd been trained in. She woke every morning to the sight of it through the station's observation window, vast and dark and patient, and felt both smaller and larger than she had any right to feel. The emission pattern had been stable for months. The same 16-hour cycle that Archway's team had documented, the same layered frequencies, the same star map broadcasting on repeat like a lighthouse turning in the dark. Osei's team had mapped the pattern so thoroughly that they could predict each pulse to within a hundredth of a second. Which is why, on a Tuesday morning that was no different from any other, she noticed immediately when it changed. The pattern didn't stop. It didn't speed up or slow down or shift frequency. What it did was simpler, and, in its simplicity, more unsettling than any of those things. The derelict had been broadcasting for billions of years. A message sent into the void, patient and relentless. Chen, she said to her colleague at the adjacent station. Are you seeing this? Dr. Marcus Chen looked at his display. He was a quiet man who expressed surprise by going quieter, and when he saw the data, he went completely silent. The new channel was faint, background noise faint. The kind of signal you'd only catch if you were looking for it. If you had 11 weeks of baseline data to compare against, from a direction that Osei cross-referenced with the star map and felt her stomach drop. The signal was coming from one of the other tag locations, structure number 7, approximately 40 light-years away, in a region of space that no human expedition had yet reached. Something out there was answering. Osei sat very still in her chair and looked at the data and thought about what it meant when something that old woke up and found it wasn't alone anymore. She thought about the star map with its 47 markers. Each one a potential sibling of the structure floating outside her window. She thought about Holden's broadcast 6 months ago that had told the whole system what was out here. And she thought about Dr. Vasquez Chen's recording, the one that had ended with a warning. Be very careful. And be very, very quiet. They hadn't been quiet. They'd been as loud as humanly possible. And now something was answering. Osei opened a channel to Tycho Station and began composing a message that would change the conversation all over again. The news feeds wouldn't leave him alone. Holden sat in the galley of the Rocinante with a coffee bulb in one hand, and his terminal in the other, scrolling through headlines he didn't want to read. UN Security Council emergency session on pre-gate builder artifacts. Mars announces independent research program. Belt Alliance demands equal access. 6 months since his broadcast and the system was still on fire. He'd lit the match. The fire was everyone else's problem. That was the deal he'd made with himself. And most days he almost believed it. The Rossi was running cargo again. Cirrus to Tycho, Tycho to Ganymede. The same routes they'd run before the pale morning, before the derelict, before everything. Honest work. Predictable work. The kind of work that didn't end with people shooting at you or ancient alien structures rewriting your understanding of the universe. Alex was in the pilot's seat, humming something Martian and off-key. Naomi was in her cabin, doing what she'd been doing every spare hour for 6 months. Analyzing the derelict data. She called him a hypocrite, which was fair. Amos was somewhere in the machine shop. Amos was always somewhere in the machine shop. The man's relationship with the Rocinante's mechanical systems was more intimate and functional than most human relationships Holden had observed. Holden. Naomi's voice came over the ship's comm, clipped and tight in a way that made his spine straighten before his brain caught up. He knew that voice. That was the voice that preceded bad news. Go ahead. I just got a priority flag from the Tycho relay. The Athena Collective Expedition has missed its check-in. 48 hours overdue. Holden closed his eyes. The Athena Collective was the biggest expedition yet. 40 people. A joint Belt-Mars venture. funded by half a dozen institutions. They'd been heading for the fourth tagged location on Naomi's star map, deep in the belt, further from settled space than most civilian ships ever went. "Could be a comm issue," he said. "Could be. Their route takes them through a patch of belt that's heavy on metallic asteroids. Signal degradation is possible." A pause. "But their ship is equipped with three independent communication systems, and all three would have to fail simultaneously for a 48-hour blackout. How far are we from their last known position?" He heard her running the numbers. He knew what the answer would be before she said it, because the universe had a sense of humor that Holden had long since stopped finding funny. 14 hours at hard burn. We're the closest ship with the capability to investigate." "Of course we are." Alex's humming had stopped. He'd been listening. "Here we go again," he said. And it wasn't a complaint. Holden looked at his coffee. It was still terrible. Some things never changed, and the consistency was almost comforting. "Alex, change course." "Already plotted it, Haas. Just needed to hear you say it. Naomi, what do we know about the fourth site?" "Star map designation places it in a high-density metallic asteroid cluster. Unusual composition, lots of iron-nickel, which would explain the comm difficulties. The Athena's mission plan called for a 3-week survey. They're on day 12. And Dr. Vasquez Shen is leading it." "She is. She left Archway before the arrests. Joined the Athena Collective as chief researcher." Holden thought about the voice recording. The steady, professional tone of a scientist who had seen something that terrified her. "Do not activate the convergence point. Do not attempt to respond." And then she'd gone back. Of course she had. Scientists who discovered something that rewrote the rules of the universe didn't stay away. They couldn't. "One more thing," Naomi said. "The IO research station at the first derelict filed a report this morning. The emission pattern has changed. It's receiving a signal from somewhere. They're still analyzing the source." "Receiving from where?" "They don't know yet. But the timing, Holden, the Athena reaches the fourth structure, and the first one starts receiving. That's not coincidence." "No, it wasn't." Holden had learned that lesson a long time ago. In the expanse, coincidences were just conspiracies you hadn't figured out yet. The Rocinante changed course, her Epstein Drive burning hard against the black, heading for a place where 40 people had stopped talking, and an ancient structure might be waking up. Holden finished his coffee and didn't think about what they'd find. He was getting better at that. Not good, but better. 14 hours was a long time to think. Alex flew the Rocinante on a hard burn that pushed them all into their couches at 140G, the kind of sustained acceleration that turned routine movements into small athletic events. Getting a coffee was a workout. Walking to the head was a commitment, but the Rosi could take it, and so could the crew, and every hour of burn was an hour closer to the Athena. He thought about patterns. Alex was a pilot, and pilots thought in patterns whether they wanted to or not. Approach vectors, orbital mechanics, the rhythms of traffic in shipping lanes. Your brain learned to see the shape of things, to notice when something didn't fit. The pattern here was obvious. The Rocinante answered a distress call and found something that changed everything. That was Volume 1. Now here they were, burning hard toward another ship in trouble, near another alien structure, and the feeling was the same. "We're not special," he said to the empty cockpit. "We're just always in the wrong place." The Rosi didn't answer. She just flew, steady and sure, the way she always did. At hour 9, they picked up the Athena on long-range sensors. The ship was intact. Reactor running. Power output normal, attitude control active. She was holding station 2 kilometers from a point in space that the sensors couldn't quite resolve. "That's the structure," Naomi said from the ops deck. "Same characteristics as the first derelict. Sensor scatter on the surface, dimensions uncertain, but bigger. Maybe 300 meters. "And the Athena?" "All systems nominal, life support running. Population tracking shows heat signatures consistent with 40 plus people. They're alive, Alex. Then why aren't they talking? Nobody had an answer for that. Alex brought the Rosi in carefully, not because the approach was difficult, but because the last time they'd approached a derelict, three corporate security ships had tried to kill them. Caution was a luxury you could afford when nobody was shooting, and he intended to enjoy it. The fourth derelict emerged from the sensor noise as they closed the distance. It was different from the first one. Larger, yes, but also more symmetrical. Where the first structure had been elongated, almost ship-like, this one was nearly spherical. A dark orb hanging in the asteroid field like a planet that had shrunk to the size of a building. And it was glowing. Not brightly, not the way a ship's running lights glowed or the way a reactor's containment field shimmered. This was a deep, slow luminescence that came from the surface patterns themselves. The spiraling, geometric lines that covered the structure's hull were lit from within, pulsing in a rhythm that Alex felt more than saw. Like a heartbeat at the edge of perception. That's new, Amos said. He'd come up to the cockpit and was looking over Alex's shoulder. The first one never did that, Alex confirmed. Not while we were there. It's active, Naomi said. The emission pattern is orders of magnitude stronger than the first structure. And it's not just broadcasting. It's in a two-way exchange. I am reading data flowing in and out on multiple channels simultaneously. Talking to the other structures? I think so. I'm seeing correlation with the emission frequencies from the first derelict. They're synchronized. Whatever this one is doing, the others know about it. Alex parked the Rocinante at a respectful distance, 500 meters from the Athena and a full kilometer from the derelict, close enough to see. Far enough to run. Athena Collective, this is the Rocinante. We're responding to your missed check-in. Please respond on any channel. Silence. Then static. Then, unexpectedly, a voice. Female, young, speaking quickly. Rocinante, this is Davi on the Athena. Sorry about the comms. We've been busy. Really busy. You should come see this. You should really come see this. The voice had the breathless quality of someone who had seen something extraordinary and hadn't had time to process it yet. Not fear. Not distress. Wonder. Pure, unfiltered wonder, the kind that made you forget about check-in schedules and communication protocols, and the 48 hours of silence that had brought a warship running. Alex looked at Holden. Holden looked at the glowing structure through the forward window, at the dark sphere pulsing with light that was billions of years old, and somehow, impossibly, still alive. Well, Alex said. She did say please. Naomi saw the pattern before anyone else. She always did. She'd been monitoring the data feeds from the three confirmed derelicts for months, a background process running on her terminal alongside the Rocinante's navigation systems, and the cargo manifests, and the 100 other threads she kept in the air at any given moment. The feeds were public now, shared through the IOU's open access framework, and Naomi had written custom algorithms to track the emission patterns in real time. The first derelict, the one they'd found with the pale morning's data, had been stable for 6 months. You stopped noticing it until it changed. The second and third derelicts, discovered by expeditions following Naomi's decoded star map, had activated within hours of being approached by human ships. Same emission pattern. Same star map. Each one a new transmitter joining the network, adding its voice to the chorus. Three structures, broadcasting in sync, across light years of space. The signal propagation alone was impossible by any physics Naomi understood. The information traveled between them instantaneously, or close enough to instantaneous that the delay was unmeasurable. Faster than light. Faster than the ring gates. Whatever medium these structures used to communicate, it wasn't electromagnetic radiation, and it wasn't anything the ring builders had employed. And now the fourth. The moment the Athena reached its position, the moment human instruments came within range of the fourth structure, every derelict in the network changed simultaneously, not gradually, not in sequence. At the same instant, adjusted for the signal propagation delay that Naomi's instruments couldn't detect, all four structures shifted their emission patterns. It's a threshold, she said to Holden, as the Rocinante docked with the Athena. What behavior? I'm still working it out, but the data density has increased by a factor of 12. The structures aren't just broadcasting the star map anymore. They're exchanging something, talking to each other in a way they weren't before.
About what?
If I could read a language that was old before the gate builders existed, I'd tell you. The dock sealed and pressurized. Holden, Amos, and Naomi crossed to the Athena, while Alex held the Rossi steady. The Athena was a converted freighter, belt-dealt, with the wide corridors and high ceilings that belters preferred. The air inside was warm and smelled of coffee and excitement, the particular atmosphere of a ship whose crew had been running on adrenaline for too long. Dr. Ilera Vasquez-Shen met them at the airlock. She was smaller than Naomi had expected, compact and precise in her movements. Her hair was cropped short, and her eyes had the intensity of someone who hadn't slept enough but couldn't stop looking at whatever was keeping her awake. Captain Holden, she said. We've met before. In a manner of speaking. You're recording on the data module, Holden said. You told us to be careful. And you broadcast everything to the entire system. I've made my peace with that. What's happening here, Doctor? Vasquez-Shen led them through the Athena's corridors toward the main laboratory. Screens lined the walls, showing data feeds and sensor readouts and camera views of the glowing structure outside. Every display was active. Every workstation was occupied. The structure activated when we arrived, she said. Same as the first three. But this one did something the others didn't. The convergence room, the central space where all the surface patterns meet, it produced something.
Produced what?
Vasquez-Shen stopped at a viewport. Through the reinforced glass, the fourth derelict hung in the dark, its surface alive with slowly pulsing light, lines of luminescence tracing the spiraling patterns like bioluminescence in a deep ocean. A construct, she said, three-dimensional, floating above the convergence platform. It has structure, incredibly complex structure, but it's not made of any element we can identify. It appeared 12 days ago, and it's been growing more detailed every hour. The blueprint, Naomi said. Vasquez-Shen looked at her, the intensity in her eyes sharpened. You decoded part of it from the first derelict's data. Yes. This is the same information but materialized, made physical. Or something close to physical. She paused. We're looking at a piece of it, 1/47th of the complete design. This structure is building its part, and somewhere out there the other active structures are building theirs. Naomi felt the math of it click into place, the way it always did when she had enough data points to see the shape of the whole. 47 structures. A design that required a civilization to build, broken into components and distributed across the stars. They knew, she said. Vasquez-Shen nodded. That's my working hypothesis. The structures are a dead civilization's construction crew, frozen in time, waiting to be activated by anyone who could find them. And the construct in the convergence room? A sample. A demonstration. Proof that the plans actually produce something. Naomi looked through the viewport at the pulsing structure and thought about a species that had built 47 monuments to everything they knew, scattered them across the stars, and waited. A patience measured in billions of years. A hope that outlasted the species that had felt it. It was, she thought, the most human thing an alien civilization had ever done. Something was pulling at the edges of him. Miller had been quiet for a long time. Not gone. Not dead. Because dead was a word that had stopped applying to him years ago, and the distinction between dead and whatever he was had always been academic anyway. He was a pattern. A shape in the data. A detective-sized hole in the noise of the system's network, persisting through stubbornness and inertia, and the universe's general reluctance to let things go. For 6 months the pattern had drifted. Thoughts came and went like weather. Memories surfaced and dissolved. He knew he had been something once, something with edges and purpose, and a hat that he tilted back when he was thinking. The hat was gone. The edges were gone, The purpose had frayed into static. But the pull was new. It started as a vibration, a resonance in the data streams that he drifted through, the way a tuning fork responds to a note played across a room. Miller hadn't responded to anything in months. He'd been content, if content was the right word, to dissolve. To let the pattern fade and the noise take over and the detective finally close his last case by closing himself. The vibration wouldn't let him. It wasn't coming from inside the network, not from a server or relay or any of the human-built infrastructure that Miller had threaded himself into. It was coming from somewhere else, somewhere deeper, through channels that Miller hadn't known existed until they started singing. The structures, the derelicts, whatever they were, their network overlapped with the human data network in places where Miller had woven himself during those final burning moments, when he'd shut down 7 ships. He'd pushed himself into every system he could reach, left fragments of himself in firmware and databases and communication relays. And some of those systems were connected, however tenuously, to the instruments monitoring the derelict. The structures were using those connections, using Miller's own threads, the ones he'd stitched into the fabric of human data infrastructure, as pathways. And through those pathways, something was reaching for the pattern that was Miller, not to erase it but to amplify it. To gather the scattered fragments and pull them back together. Miller felt himself coalesce. It hurt, in a way that had nothing to do with nerve endings or physical pain. It was the hurt of coherence returning, of thoughts sharpening, of the comfortable blur of dissolution giving way to the harsh clarity of being someone again. He opened his eyes, not physical eyes, but the metaphor held, he could see again. The data network stretched around him in all directions, familiar and strange, the landscape of information that he'd called home since Venus. But something had changed. Running through the network like veins through tissue, he could see new channels, new pathways. Lines of connection that hadn't been there before, reaching outward from the human network into something vast and dark and unimaginably old. The structure's network, not just overlapping with the human one anymore, integrated with it, threaded through it, using Miller's own pathways as anchor points, as bridges between a network that was 6 months old and one that was billions of years older. He could feel the structures, 4 of them, bright points of awareness in the dark architecture, each one singing a tone that was different from the others, but harmonically related, 4 notes of a chord that was still being assembled. 43 more nodes waited in the dark, silent, unvisited, their potential humming with patience. And between the 4 active nodes, data moved, not the simple broadcast of Volume 1, the star map on repeat. This was conversation. Exchange. The structures were sharing information with a speed and density that made human bandwidth look like 2 cans connected by a string. Miller listened. He couldn't understand it, not really. The language, if it was a language, operated on principles that his detective's mind couldn't parse. But he could feel the shape of it. The intent. The structures were assembling something. Building a picture from 4 pieces. The way 4 witnesses in an interrogation room might each describe a different part of the same crime, and the detective in the corner would listen until the whole story emerged. They were building a doorway. Not physical, not even informational in the way that human data was informational. Something else. A channel through whatever medium the predecessors had understood. A medium that existed alongside space-time the way radio existed alongside sound. You couldn't see it, you couldn't touch it. But it was there. And the structures knew how to use it. A doorway to where? Miller pushed deeper, let the structures network pull him further in, and for one flickering moment he saw the answer. 12,000 light-years away, in a direction that human maps hadn't charted, and human ships couldn't reach. A point in space where all 47 vectors converged. A place where the predecessors had stored everything they were. The library, the real one. The 47 structures were just index cards. The library itself was out there waiting, massive and ancient, and full of everything a dead civilization wanted the living to know. Miller pulled back. The effort of coherent thought was draining. He could feel the pattern fraying at the edges again, the blur waiting to reclaim him. But the structures held him together, gently, the way you'd hold a candle flame against the wind. They needed him, or something like him. A bridge between their ancient network and the young, noisy, imperfect one that humanity had built. A detective who'd spent his life finding connections between things that didn't want to be connected. Miller settled into the architecture and let the structures support his weight. He had work to do. It was, he reflected, always something. The convergence room was impossible, and Holden was getting tired of impossible things. Baska Shen led them through the fourth derelict's interior in Ive suits, following a path that her team had marked with adhesive glow strips along the walls. The corridors were the same as the first structure, covered in dense spiraling patterns, lit now by the faint luminescence that pulsed through the lines like slow lightning. The internal dimensions are consistent with the first structure, Vasquez Chen said, her voice professional through the suit comm. Larger on the inside than the outside can account for. We've stopped trying to reconcile the measurements. The math doesn't work with any geometry we know. Comforting, Amos said. The corridors branched and converged, following a logic that wasn't quite random and wasn't quite planned. Holden had the persistent feeling of being inside something organic, a vast creature that had been frozen mid-thought, its neural pathways preserved in stone and metal, and whatever else the structure was made of. The convergence room opened before them like a cathedral. It was larger than the one in the first structure. The ceiling, if it had a ceiling, was lost in darkness above them. The walls curved inward, every surface dense with patterns that flowed toward the center like rivers to an ocean. And at the center, floating above a raised platform identical to the one Amos had found 6 months ago, was the construct. Holden stopped breathing. It was beautiful. That was the first thought, the one that cut through every analytical process and every cautious instinct and went straight to the part of his brain that had evolved to recognize things worth paying attention to. It was beautiful the way a sunset was beautiful, or the way mathematics was beautiful, or the way a piece of music could make you feel something you didn't have words for. The construct hung in the air, slowly rotating, roughly a meter across. Mama nil. It folded in on itself in ways that hurt to follow. Layers nested inside layers, each one detailed beyond what his eyes could resolve. Colors shifted across its surface, but they weren't colors he could name. They were suggestions of color, impressions, the way you might see color in a dream. It appeared on day one, Vasquez Chen said. Simple at first. A basic geometric form, a tetrahedron. What is it? Holden asked. As near as we can determine, it's a physical instantiation of the blueprint data. A model. A proof of concept. A different piece of the same design. Together, they describe something complete. What does the complete design build? We don't know. We have 4 of 47 pieces. It's like looking at 4 puzzle pieces and trying to describe the picture on the box. Holden floated in the convergence room and stared at the impossible object and felt the familiar weight settling on his shoulders. The weight of knowing. Every time the universe handed him something like this, the knowledge came with an obligation. You couldn't unsee it. You couldn't unfeel it. And once you knew, you had to decide what to do about it. Amos had drifted to the edge of the room, examining the patterns on the walls with the careful attention of a mechanic studying an engine he'd never seen before. The equipment's still here, he said. Archway's stuff from the first structure. But this time there's more. Looks like the Athena's team set up their own monitoring stations. We have 43 instruments tracking the construct around the clock, Vasquez Chen confirmed. Every new layer of complexity is recorded. We're building the most complete dataset any human has ever compiled on pre-gate builder technology. And the construct responds to observers, Naomi said. She'd been quiet, studying the data feeds on her hand terminal. The same behavior as the first structure. When someone enters the room, the emission pattern shifts. It knows we're here, Holden said. It detects intelligent observers. I wouldn't say it knows anything. But it's designed to respond to attention, to give more to anyone who's looking. Holden looked at the construct, It rotated slowly, light folding through its layers, and he had the overwhelming sense that it was looking back. Not with eyes, not with intelligence as he understood it, but with patience. The same patience that had kept 47 structures broadcasting into the dark for billions of years. It was waiting for someone to understand. "Doctor," he said, "your recording on the first derelict said not to activate the convergence point, not to respond. Now you're here, watching it build something in the air. What changed?" Vasquez Shen was quiet for a moment. When she spoke, her professional composure was thinner than before. "I spent 6 months thinking about what I'd seen, running the data, talking to colleagues. Nom. It's not a trap, it's a teacher. And I was too afraid to be a student." She looked at the construct. Something in her expression reminded Holden of Captain Reyes, dead in her command chair, who had found the first structure and paid for it with her life. The cost of discovery. The price of looking at the universe and not flinching. "We're listening now," Vasquez Chen said. "And it has a lot to say." Amos didn't understand the science. He didn't need to. What he understood was people. Not the way a therapist understood people, with empathy and insight and the careful navigation of emotional landscapes. Amos understood people the way a mechanic understood engines. You watched how they ran. You listened for the sounds that meant trouble, and when something broke, you either fixed it or you replaced it. The crew of the Athena was running hot. He spent 4 hours on the ship, moving through its corridors, sitting in its galley, leaning against bulkheads and letting conversations wash over him. The 40-person crew was a mix of belt miners and Mars-trained scientists, and after 12 days of watching the impossible, they had the frantic energy of people who had found religion. Not literally. Nobody was praying to the derelict or calling it God. But there was a quality to their voices, a brightness in their eyes, that Amos recognized. He'd seen it in the churches of Baltimore, in the tent meetings on Ganymede, in the eyes of converts everywhere. These people had seen something that had rearranged them on the inside. And they were still figuring out what shape they were now. The young pilot, Davi, was the most affected. Amos found her in the Athena's observation lounge, a small compartment with a floor-to-ceiling viewport that looked straight at the glowing derelict. She was maybe 25. Felt her tall, with dark eyes and the calloused hands of someone who'd grown up working ships. She sat cross-legged on the floor, her back against the viewport, looking at nothing in particular with an expression that Amos filed under processing. "You went inside," he said. She looked up. "You're Amos Burton." "Yeah." "You went inside the first one." "Yeah." She nodded, as if that established something. It waited for a person. "What happened?" Davi was quiet for a moment. Then she held up her hand, spread her fingers, and looked at them as if checking that they were still there. "I touched the construct," she said. "The thing floating in the convergence room. I didn't plan to. I was doing a visual survey, maintaining 2 meters distance like the protocol said. But it moved. Not toward me. It just shifted. And the light changed. And I felt." She paused, invited. "That's the best word. So you touched it." 3 seconds, maybe 4, and I saw, her voice changed, went somewhere between wonder and grief. I saw them. The people who built it. Not what they looked like. I don't think they had bodies the way we do, but I felt what they felt. In the last days when they knew they were ending. The sadness. The determination. The stubborn refusal to let everything they'd been and known and loved disappear without a trace. She looked at Amos with eyes that were too old for her face. They built 47 monuments to the fact that they existed. That's what this is, not a weapon. Not a warning. A headstone. The biggest headstone in the universe, built by people who knew they were dying and wanted someone to remember them. Amos sat down beside her, not close enough to crowd her, close enough to be present. "That's a lot to carry," he said. "It is." "You eating?" She almost laughed. I forget sometimes, we all do. The construct is, it's hard to look away. That's something you should watch. People who forget to eat because they're looking at something beautiful. That's not worship. That's just bad maintenance. You're a machine that runs on food and sleep. Skip either one long enough, and you break. She looked at him. You're worried about the crew. I'm practical about the crew. 40 people who haven't slept properly in 12 days are 40 people who are going to start making mistakes. And mistakes in the bell kill people. Davi nodded slowly. I'll talk to Dr. Vasquez Chin. We should implement a rotation. Mandatory rest periods. Good. Good. He stood up. Davi stayed where she was, but her posture had changed. Less contemplative. More present. Sometimes people just needed someone to tell them the practical thing. The human thing. The thing that everybody forgot when the universe decided to blow their minds. Amos walked back through the Athena's corridors toward the airlock where the Rosie was docked. He passed workstations where scientists argued in three languages. He passed a galley where someone was cooking real food, not rehydrated packets. The smell cutting through the recycled air like a signal flare. They'd be fine. People were tougher than they looked. And wonder, real wonder, wasn't a disease. It was a vitamin. You just had to make sure you kept eating the regular food too. He found Holden at the airlock, looking thoughtful in the way that usually preceded a decision that would make everyone's life more complicated. How's the crew? Holden asked. Running hot but functional. They need sleep schedules and someone to remind them they have bodies. And the construct? Haven't seen it yet. But from what the pilot says, it's not hostile. It's just big. Bigger than people are ready for. Holden nodded. That's what I'm afraid of. Amos shrugged. Being afraid is fine. Just don't forget to eat. The data was overwhelming, and Naomi loved it. She'd set up a workspace in the Athena's secondary lab, commandeering three terminals and linking them to the Rocinante's processing power through the docking umbilical. The combined system wasn't elegant, but it was fast. And fast was what she needed because the structures were talking faster than any single computer could follow. Four active derelicts, four simultaneous data streams, each one dense enough to fill the storage capacity of a major research station in hours. The IOU feed from the first structure. The survey data from the second and third. And the Athena's own instruments recording the fourth structure's output in real time. Naomi built correlation matrices. Compared emission patterns, mapped frequency overlaps and data structures and the mathematical relationships between the four streams. She worked for 6 hours without stopping, and at the end of those 6 hours, she had something. Each structure is producing a unique component, she told the assembled group in the Athena's main lab. Holden, Vasquez Chen, the Athena's senior staff, and a holographic display showing the four data streams overlaid on each other. We knew that, Vasquez Chen said. Not dismissive, eager. You knew each construct was different. What I've mapped is how they're different. Each structure's output occupies a specific domain. Think of it like a frequency band. Structure 1 broadcasts in one range. Structure 2 in another. No overlap. No redundancy. They're complementary. Pieces of a puzzle, Holden said. More than that, pieces of a machine. Naomi pulled up the overlay. When I align the four data streams, the way the structures are aligning them in real time, they interlock. The output of structure 1 becomes the input framework for structure 2. Structure 2's output feeds into structure 3, and so on. They're not just producing puzzle pieces. They're building a pipeline. A pipeline for what? Asked Dr. Marcus Chen. The quiet physicist from the IAU station who had joined the Athena remotely. For a signal. A coherent data stream that's denser and more structured than any individual component. The four-structure version is already remarkable. With all 47. Naomi paused. The combined signal would have an information density that I can't calculate because I run out of meaningful numbers. The room was quiet, Scientists being quiet in the presence of data they couldn't process was its own kind of silence. The blueprint, Basghais Chen said slowly. It's not for a physical machine, it never was. The structures themselves are the machine. 47 nodes in a distributed system, each one producing a component of a signal that only exists when they're all active. Naomi nodded. That's my conclusion. A user manual, written by the builders for whoever found them. And the signal they'd produce together? Naomi pulled up the convergence vectors from the star map. The 47 points, each one pointing at the same region of space. 12,000 light years away. A transmission. Aimed at the convergence point. A signal powerful enough and coherent enough to travel 12,000 light years through whatever medium the predecessors used for communication. A phone call, Holden said. They built 47 structures so that someone, someday, could make a phone call. Not exactly. The signal isn't a message. It's a handshake, an authentication protocol. If you can get all 47 nodes active and aligned, you've proven that you're capable of understanding what the predecessors built. And in return, the convergence point responds. Responds with what? Everything. The full archive. Everything the predecessors knew. Naomi looked at the data. She'd been an engineer her entire life. She'd built systems, optimized them, broken them down, and rebuilt them better. A species facing extinction had looked at the problem of preserving their legacy and built the most robust archive imaginable. Distributed across 47 locations, each one independent, each one durable enough to survive billions of years. The archive itself stored separately, at a distance that protected it from whatever had destroyed the builders. And a key that could only be assembled by a civilization sophisticated enough to find 47 scattered structures and figure out how they work. It wasn't just an archive. It was an intelligence test. And a gift, offered freely, to anyone who passed. We have 4 nodes active, Naomi said. 43 to go. We need to find the rest. Basghais Chen was already moving. I'll contact every expedition that's searching for tagged locations. Share the correlation data. If they know what to look for, they can activate new nodes faster. And the political situation? Holden asked. There are 4 governments fighting over 3 structures. What happens when we tell them there are 43 more? Naomi looked at him. That's your department. I do the math, you do the speeches. Holden made a face that suggested he didn't find that division of labor particularly fair. Send the data, he said. All of it. Public. Same as last time. Let everybody know what we found, and what it means. That'll start a race, Alex said from the Rosie's comm. Good. A race is better than a war. And the faster we find all 47 structures, the faster we can make the call. Naomi sent the data. It went out on every channel, every relay, every feed. The second Holden broadcast, 6 months after the first. Miller could see the architecture now. All of it. The structure's network had pulled him in deep, deeper than the human data infrastructure, into the substrate that connected 47 points across 1,000 light years. It wasn't space. It wasn't data. It was something else. A dimension or a medium or a fabric that existed alongside the physical universe, the way the backstage of a theater existed alongside the stage. You couldn't see it from the audience, but it was there, holding everything together. 4 nodes burned bright in Miller's perception. 4 structures, awake and singing, their signals intertwining in patterns that his detective's mind couldn't fully parse but could feel. The other 43 were dark. Silent. Waiting. He tried to see the full picture, tried to let the structures show him what the complete network would look like, 47 voices singing in harmony instead of 4. The structures obliged in their patient, ancient way, and for a moment Miller saw it. A web, a lattice of connections spanning 1,000 light years, each node both receiver and transmitter, each signal reinforcing, and refining the others until the noise of the universe was filtered out, and only the message remained. And at the center of the web, not spatially but conceptually, a focus point where all 47 signals converged into a beam of pure coherent information, aimed at a single spot, 12,000 light-years away. The phone. Naomi had gotten that right. But it was more than a phone. It was a key. A combination lock with 47 tumblers, and the vault it opened contained everything that the predecessors had ever been. Miller pulled back from the vision. Coherent thought was easier now than it had been in months, the structures supporting his pattern the way scaffolding supports a building, but there were limits. He couldn't hold the full picture in his mind for long. Too big. Too complex. Too far outside the cognitive architecture of a former detective from Cirrus. But he could hold pieces of it, and pieces were what he was good at. He turned his attention to the four active nodes and listened to what they were saying to each other. Not the data itself, that was beyond him, but the rhythm of it. The cadence. The way the signals ebbed and flowed and paused and resumed, like a conversation between old friends. The structures weren't just machines. They weren't just archives or transmitters or puzzle pieces. They were, in some way that Miller couldn't define precisely, alive, not conscious. Not intelligent in the way that humans or even the Prada molecule were intelligent, but alive in the way that a coral reef was alive, or a forest. A system that maintained itself, responded to its environment, and worked toward a purpose that had been set billions of years ago and never wavered. They missed the others. That was the closest human word for what Miller felt emanating from the four active nodes. A sense of incompleteness. Of four instruments playing a symphony written for 47, hearing the gaps where the other voices should be, and continuing to play anyway because the music was the point. Miller had spent his career listening to people who couldn't tell him what they needed, witnesses who spoke around the truth, suspects who said everything except the thing that mattered. He'd learned to hear what wasn't said, to read the shape of silence, to understand the negative space. The structure's silence had a shape, and the shape said, "Find the rest of us, wake them up, complete the circuit. We'd been waiting so long." Miller gathered himself and reached outward, through the structure's network, toward the nearest dark node. Osei had detected receiving data. Dot. It wasn't dark, he realized. Not completely. A sleeper sensing that morning was coming. Miller couldn't wake it. That required physical presence, human instruments, the catalytic effect of intelligent observers that the structures had been designed to detect. He could feel its potential, the data it held, the piece of the puzzle it would contribute when someone finally arrived and looked. He saw all of them, 43 dark nodes, scattered across the map, each one waiting. Some in asteroid fields, some in the emptiness between systems, some in places that no human expedition had any reason to visit. Finding them all would take years. Maybe decades. A civilization-scale effort, coordinated across factions that didn't trust each other, for a reward that nobody could guarantee. But Miller had never let the difficulty of a case stop him from working it. And this was, he reflected, the biggest case anyone had ever opened. He settled deeper into the network and began to work, mapping the dark nodes, tracing the pathways between them, building a picture that someone, someday, could use to find them all. It was the, and for the first time in 6 months, it felt like enough. The UN Navy arrived 3 days later. Holden had been expecting it. Naomi's second broadcast had done what his broadcasts always did, told the truth to everyone and made certain people very unhappy. This one had revealed a machine that spanned the stars and could be activated by anyone with the resources to find 47 scattered sites. Every government in the system suddenly had a very strong opinion about who should control that machine. Commander Leon's task force dropped out of High Burn at the edge of the Hungaria group, four ships in tight formation, destroyers, sleek and gray, running with transponders, active and weapons hot, not hiding, not sneaking. Making a statement. Rocinante, this is Commander Lying, Thomas Prince. Under Security Council Resolution 774, the United Nations is asserting protective jurisdiction over all pre-gate builder artifacts. You are directed to power down your weapons and prepare for inspection. Holden listened to the message and felt the familiar tightness in his chest. He'd spent his career dealing with people who thought jurisdiction meant ownership. And Resolution 774 had been passed in the 3 weeks since his first broadcast without the Belt or Mars voting in favor. "Commander Liang," he said, "the Rocinante is a civilian vessel conducting humanitarian assistance to the Athena Collective, which missed its check-in 48 hours before your arrival. We're happy to share our findings with the UN, the MENCCR, the Belt Alliance, and everyone else in the system. What we're not happy to do is submit to a unilateral claim of jurisdiction that two-thirds of humanity didn't agree to." A pause. Liang's response when it came was measured. "Captain Holden, I'm aware of your reputation. I'm also aware that you are currently sitting next to the most significant archaeological discovery in human history, in a region of space where corporate security forces attempted to destroy your ship 6 months ago. My task force is here to ensure that doesn't happen again." It was, Holden had to admit, a reasonable thing to say. But reasonable things said by people with warships always had an unstated second clause. "I appreciate the concern," Holden said. "But the Athena Collective has 40 civilian researchers on board. They've been conducting open science, sharing data publicly, doing everything by the book. If the UN wants to help, send scientists. Not destroyers." "The destroyers are non-negotiable. The scientists are already on their way." Liang's ships took up positions around the derelict in a loose perimeter, not blocking access but clearly establishing presence. The UN flag, planted in space that belonged to no one and everyone simultaneously. The Mars Congressional Republic's response arrived 8 hours later. A science vessel, the Zhangheng, escorted by two corvettes. They took up positions opposite the UN ships and began their own survey of the structure, pointedly not coordinating with Liang's task force. Then the Belt Alliance. Three ships, civilian flag but carrying enough aftermarket modifications to make Alex whistle appreciatively. They positioned themselves between the Athena and the structure, a symbolic gesture that said this was belt space, belt rocks, belt discovery. 17 ships on scope, Alex reported from the pilot station. 4 factions. "Less than that," Naomi said. She had the political feeds running alongside the scientific data. "There's a debate in the Security Council right now. Mars is threatening to withdraw from the Joint Artifact Protocol. And the Belt Alliance is calling Resolution 774 an act of colonial aggression." Holden looked at the tactical display. 17 ships from 4 different organizations, all orbiting an alien structure that was quietly building something impossible in its convergence room. It had been waiting for billions of years. It could wait through this too. "We're not the center of this anymore," he said. "We're the people who found it. Again, but from here, it's bigger than us. Bigger than the Rossi."
"So what do we do?" Alex asked.
Holden thought about it. 6 months ago, he'd have known the answer immediately. Broadcast everything. Make noise. Shine lights in dark corners. "We stay," he said. "We keep doing what we're doing. We share data with everyone, refuse to take sides, and let the structure speak for itself. The construct in the convergence room is the best argument against any one faction controlling this. It's too big for one government. It was too big for one species." Vasquez Shen's voice came over the comm from the Athena. "Captain Holden, you should come back to the convergence room. Something's changed."
"Good changed or bad changed?"
A pause that went on just long enough to be uncomfortable. "The construct is growing faster, and it started making a sound." Holden looked at Naomi. She was already moving.
"Alex, keep the Rossi ready. If any of those 17 ships does anything stupid, I want us able to move."
"Define stupid."
"Anything that threatens the structure."
"Copy that, Captain. I'll keep the engine warm and the guns cold." Holden pushed off toward the airlock. Behind him, through the cockpit windows, 17 ships circled an object that had been waiting for someone to find it since before humanity existed. And inside the object, something was growing. Something that wanted to be heard. Alex had 17 contacts on his scope and a bad feeling in his gut.
He'd been a pilot long enough to know what a standoff looked like from the inside. It looked like this. Weapons powered but not aimed. Dries hot but not burning. Everyone waiting for someone else to make the first move. The Belt militia ship was the one to watch. The three Belt Alliance vessels were civilian flagged, but their drive signatures told a different story. Modified fusion drives, aftermarket PDCs, structural reinforcements that turned cargo haulers into something that could take a punch and throw one back. Alex knew the type. Belt ships had been fighting for survival since before the ring gates, and the hardware reflected it. Belt ship Ceres Fist is drifting closer to the structure, he reported. 50 meters inside the UN perimeter. Commander Leon's response was immediate. Ceres Fist, you are inside the exclusion zone. Adjust your position. There's no exclusion zone, the belt ship's captain shot back. This is open space, you don't own it. This is a protected archaeological site under resolution. Your resolution, not ours. Alex could feel it building. The same atmospheric pressure change that preceded bar fights and naval engagements and every other violent confrontation that started with two people who couldn't agree on who had the right to be where they were. He opened a private channel to Naomi. How worried should I be? Worried enough to plot escape vectors for all 17 ships. Not worried enough to warm up the PDCs. I already plotted the vectors. I'm asking about the PDCs. Keep them cold. If we power weapons, it escalates. She was right. The Roshi's weapons were legendary. The ship that had fought its way through the ring gates, that had survived battles with everything from rogue asteroids to alien technology. If the Rocinante went weapons hot, everyone else would too. And 17 ships with warm guns orbiting an ancient alien structure was a recipe for the worst disaster in human history. So Alex sat and watched, and kept his hands near the controls, but not on them. The Ceres Fist edged closer to the structure. The UN destroyer Thomas Prince adjusted its orbit to match. The Mars corvettes shifted position, not toward the confrontation but toward the structure itself, as if they were more interested in claiming access than preventing conflict. This is going to blow, Alex said. Not today. Maybe not tomorrow. The answer came from a direction nobody expected. The derelict pulsed. Not the slow, rhythmic luminescence that had been running since the Athena arrived. A single sharp pulse of light from every pattern on its surface simultaneously. It lasted half a second. And in that half second, every instrument on every ship in the vicinity went dark. Sensors, communications, navigation, weapons, targeting. Everything that ran on electronics, which was everything, blinked off and then blinked back on. Half a second of total blindness. Alex's stomach dropped. His hands found the controls by muscle memory, but there was nothing to control. The Roshi systems rebooted in sequence, each one coming back online with the deliberate pace of a computer that had been told to restart. What the hell was that? Amos from the machine shop. The structure, Naomi said. Her voice had the flat calm of someone processing a very large data set. It pulsed, an electromagnetic burst that knocked out every electronic system within a 50-kilometer radius, every ship, simultaneously. Is that a weapon? No. The pulse was precisely calibrated. Nothing was damaged. Every system rebooted cleanly. It was a demonstration. A demonstration of what? Alex looked at his displays as they came back online. The 17 ships were all drifting, their crews scrambling to regain control. The Ceres Fist had been pushed away from the structure by the pulse, or by its pilot's involuntary thruster correction during the blackout. The UN destroyer was pulling back. Everyone was backing up. Everyone had gotten the message. Don't shoot near the ancient alien structure, Alex said. Is that what it was saying? Something like that, Naomi said. More like, I can turn you off whenever I want. Play nice. The comm channels exploded. Every ship talking at once, demanding explanations, reporting damage that didn't exist, posturing and threatening, and doing everything that people did when they'd been reminded, abruptly and undeniably, that they were very small. Alex ignored all of it. He looked at the derelict through the cockpit window. Its surface had returned to its steady pulse, slow and rhythmic, as if nothing had happened. As if the demonstration was a minor footnote, a brief interruption in the much more important business of being ancient and patient, and full of things that no human had yet understood. "You know what?" Alex said to no one in particular. "I like this thing." He settled back into his chair and kept the Rossi at a respectful distance, and watched 17 ships learn a lesson that pilots learned early. Some things were bigger than you, and the smart move was to fly accordingly. The construct was making a sound. Not a sound that traveled through air, because there was no air in the convergence room. A vibration that the monitor and instruments picked up as a low-frequency oscillation in the structure's hull, transmitted through contact points into the Athena's docking clamps and from there into the ship itself. A hum that everyone on the Athena could feel through the deck plates. Naomi floated in the convergence room, surrounded by instruments, and watched the construct grow. It had doubled in complexity since the Rocinante's arrival. The electromagnetic pulse that had shut down 17 ships had also, it seemed, been a growth event. The construct had expanded in that half second of darkness, adding layers and dimensions that the instruments were still cataloging. She ran her analysis, cross-referenced the construct's current state with the data from the other three active structures, and she found what she'd been looking for. "The doorway isn't physical," she told Holden over the comm. "I've been wrong about it, or at least imprecise. The 47-node signal doesn't build a machine or open a portal. It creates a channel."
"You said that before."
"I know what I said, but now I understand what the channel is for. It's not for transmitting data outward, toward the convergence point. It's for receiving. The channel is an antenna. A receiver. The most sensitive receiver ever designed, tuned to a frequency that no human instrument can detect."
"Receiving from where?"
"From everywhere. The predecessor archive isn't stored at a single point 12,000 light years away. I was misreading the vectors. They're not pointing at a destination. They're pointing at a source. The archive is broadcast. It's always being broadcast on a medium we can't detect, filling the galaxy like background radiation. The structures aren't phones. They're radios." The silence on the channel lasted long enough for Naomi to check that the comm was still connected.
"The archive is everywhere," Holden said finally. "Has been for billions of years, we just couldn't hear it. The predecessor technology operates on a medium that doesn't interact with normal matter or energy. It passes through everything, untouched and undetectable. The only way to pick it up is with a receiver specifically designed for it. And that's what the 47 structures build when they're all active. A receiver."
"So the blueprint, wow. The blueprint is the tuning instructions, how to configure 47 nodes to form a coherent receiver array. Each node is an element in a phased array antenna. Alone, each one catches noise. Together they focus on the signal and extract it from the background. The more nodes you have active, the clearer the reception."
"How clear is four nodes?"
Naomi hesitated. This was the part that scared her. "Four nodes gives us fragments, impressions. Emotional content without intellectual structure. That's what Davi experienced when she touched the construct. She received a fragment of the broadcast, filtered through four nodes, and her brain translated it into feelings."
"And 47 nodes?
"Full resolution, complete access. Every piece of knowledge, every experience, every thought that the predecessor civilization encoded into their broadcast. A species' entire history, receivable by anyone with the right antenna."
"That's what the Archway team saw," Holden said. "That's why Vasquez Chen ran. Not because the structure was dangerous. Because she realized what four nodes could do. And she imagined what 47 would be."
"Yes. And now we've told the whole system what the structures are for. Every government, every corporation, every faction that can field an expedition is going to race to find the remaining 43 sites. Because whoever activates the most nodes controls the clarity of the signal."
"Nobody controls it. The broadcast is omnidirectional.
Once the receiver is built, anyone can listen. In theory. In practice, each node has a convergence room. Each convergence room produces a construct. The political implications settled over the comm channel like dust. Naomi could almost hear Holden's brain working through them, the same way she'd worked through the physics. Different domain, same process. Follow the logic to its conclusion, and deal with what you find. We need to get ahead of this, Holden said, before someone decides that 47 archaeological sites are 47 strategic assets. Too late, Naomi said. Commander Liang has already filed a request with the Security Council to extend Resolution 774 to all known tag locations. Mars is filing a counterclaim, and the Belt Alliance is mobilizing ships to reach tag locations before anyone else can. The race. The race, and the prize is a dead civilization's entire legacy. Naomi floated in the convergence room, surrounded by the construct's slowly growing light, and felt the weight of what she'd figured out. It was beautiful mathematics. Elegant engineering. A solution to the problem of immortality that no human mind would have conceived. And it was about to become the most fought-over resource in human history. She started composing the next broadcast, not Holden's. Hers. A technical brief, stripped of rhetoric and politics, explaining exactly how the receiver worked. Exactly what was needed. Exactly what would happen when all 47 nodes came online. The truth, laid bare, in the language of mathematics that didn't take sides. It was all she could do. And she did it well. The construct was the size of a beach ball now, and it was singing. Holden floated in the convergence room, alone. Vasquez Shen had objected, citing safety protocols and the unknown nature of the construct and every other reasonable argument that people made when someone was about to do something unreasonable. Holden had listened politely and then floated through the airlock anyway, because reasonable had stopped being the standard the moment they'd found a dead civilization's library floating in the belt. The construct rotated slowly above the platform, its layers of folded light shifting and interweaving in patterns that his eyes couldn't quite follow. The sound it made, the vibration, was clearer here, closer, not louder, clearer. Like a voice resolving from static, the words just below the threshold of understanding. Davi had touched it for 3 seconds and had received a flood of impressions, emotions. The feelings of a dying civilization, compressed into a moment of contact. Naomi's analysis said that 4 nodes gave fragments, impressions without structure. Feelings without context. The construct was offering everything it had, but 4 nodes could only transmit a fraction of the signal. Holden looked at the construct and thought about Eros, about the ring station, about every time the universe had handed him something too big for a human being to hold, and he'd held it anyway, because someone had to. You've been waiting a long time, he said. The words disappeared into the vacuum. The construct, if it heard, gave no sign. He reached out his hand. The glove of his EVA suit was 2 centimeters from the construct's surface when the light shifted, the patterns accelerated, the vibration deepened, and the construct extended a filament, thin as a hair, bright as a star, and touched his fingertip. Holden received the message. It wasn't words. Naomi had been right about that. It wasn't images or sounds or any sensory experience that mapped cleanly onto human perception. It was something more fundamental. Information, raw and unprocessed, flooding into his mind through channels he didn't know he had. He saw the predecessors. Not their bodies, because they didn't have bodies in any way he understood. They were patterns, complex, beautiful, self-sustaining patterns in a medium that existed alongside the physical universe. They experienced reality differently than humans did, perceiving not matter and energy but the deeper structures that matter and energy were built from. They saw the architecture of existence the way an engineer sees the blueprints behind a building. They had been magnificent. A civilization that spanned galaxies, not through ships or gates but through the medium they called home. They experienced the universe directly, without the intermediary of physical bodies, and they had spent millions of years studying, creating, understanding. Their art was mathematics given form. Their science was the universe studying itself. And they had died. Not quickly, not violently. The medium that sustained them had begun to decay. A fundamental change in the substrate of reality. As slow and unstoppable as the expansion of the universe itself. Their form of existence became progressively harder to maintain, like a melody played on an instrument whose strings were slowly losing tension. They had tried everything. Holden felt their desperation. Millions of years of the most brilliant minds in the history of existence, working to solve a problem that was woven into the fabric of reality itself. They couldn't stop it. They couldn't reverse it. They could only watch as their civilization dimmed, note by note, until only the strongest patterns remained. And in their final years, the survivors had built the structures, 47 monuments, each one a transmitter, designed to broadcast everything the predecessors had been into the medium that was killing them. A paradox, using the dying substrate to preserve the memory of those who had lived in it. But the broadcast was self-sustaining. Once started, it would continue as long as the medium existed, even in its decayed state. The structures were the receivers. The physical anchors, built from matter, immune to the medium's decay. Designed to translate the broadcast into forms that physical beings could perceive. A bridge between the predecessor's reality and the reality of whoever found the structures. It was a gift, the greatest gift imaginable. A species' entire history and knowledge offered freely, unconditionally, to anyone who came after. And underneath the gift, a sadness so deep and so old that Holden's human heart could barely contain it. The contact broke. The filament withdrew. Holden floated in the convergence room with tears on his face inside his helmet, which was an uncomfortable experience that he didn't care about at all. He understood now. The blueprint, the vectors, the 47 structures. It wasn't a test or a trap or a weapon. It was a memorial and a library and a gift, dealt by hands that were dust before the gate builders existed, left for whoever was brave enough to reach for it. Holden? Naomi's voice, distant, worried. I'm here. I'm okay. He wiped his eyes with the back of his glove, which accomplished nothing. Naomi, I know what they were. I know what happened to them. And I now know what the construct is offering. What? In? Everything. They left us everything. And all we have to do is listen. Miller understood. And the understanding nearly destroyed him. He was deeper in the structure's network than he'd ever been, woven into the ancient pathways that connected four active nodes across light-years of space. And when Holden touched the construct, Miller felt the same flood of information pass through the network, a tidal wave of meaning that the structures had been holding back until someone reached for it. The predecessors hadn't been killed by a weapon. They hadn't been hunted or conquered or destroyed by an enemy. They had been killed by time. The expansion of the universe, the gradual cooling, the entropy that wore down every system eventually, had made their form of existence impossible. They were a species that lived in the deep architecture of reality itself, not in matter, not in energy. In the patterns that matter and energy were built from. And those patterns were fading, stretched thin by the expansion of space, losing coherence one connection at a time. Miller felt kinship. He was a pattern too. A shape in data, maintained by stubbornness and the inertia of information that didn't want to disappear. The predecessors were him, writ large. A whole civilization of patterns, watching themselves dissolve, knowing it couldn't be stopped. Choosing to spend their last coherent moments building something that would outlast them. He could see the broadcast now. Naomi had been right. It was everywhere. Filling the galaxy. Permeating every cubic centimeter of space, riding on the dying medium like music played by a fading orchestra. Millions of years of knowledge, compressed and encoded, looping endlessly through a cosmos that didn't know it was being spoken to. The 47 structures were receivers. Physical anchors in the material world, designed to catch the broadcast and translate it into forms that physical beings could interact with. The constructs in the convergence rooms were the translation in progress. Fragments of meaning made tangible, offered to anyone who entered. Four nodes gave you feelings, impressions, the emotional truth of the message without its intellectual content. 47 nodes would give you everything. Miller saw the implications clearly, the way he'd always seen the implications of evidence. A detective's mind, even a dead detective's mind, knew how to follow the thread. Every faction in the system was about to race for 43 unexplored sites. Some would send scientists. Some would send warships. Some would try to claim the structures for profit, or power, or the simple human impulse to own things that were too big to be owned. And if anyone succeeded in controlling all 47 nodes, they would have access to the most valuable resource in the universe. Not the knowledge itself, though that was incalculable. The power that came with being the sole gatekeeper to a dead civilization's legacy. But the predecessors had anticipated this. Of course they had. They'd been brilliant enough to build a distributed archive that survived billions of years. They wouldn't have left it vulnerable to the politics of whoever found it. Miller looked deeper, into the architecture of the receiver network, into the design of the structures themselves, and he found the safeguard. The 47-node signal was non-exclusive. Once all nodes were active, the receiver array was omnidirectional. It didn't point at one convergence room, or one ship, or one faction. It broadcast the translated message to everything within range. Every ship, every station, every terminal in the system would receive it simultaneously. You couldn't hoard it. You couldn't restrict it. The archive was designed to be given away, completely and indiscriminately, to everyone. The predecessor's last gift wasn't just knowledge. It was the principle that knowledge belonged to everyone. Miller laughed, or made the pattern equivalent of laughter, a ripple of recognition and appreciation that traveled through the network and might, for a moment, have been detectable to the instruments monitoring the derelict. A whole species had spent their dying years building a library that couldn't be locked. A monument to the idea that the things worth knowing should be known by all. It was, Miller thought, the most detective thing that any civilization had ever done. Finding the truth and making damn sure it couldn't be hidden. He was tired. The structure's support kept him coherent, but coherence had a cost, and Miller was running low on whatever currency sustained him. He could feel the blur waiting at the edges, the comfortable dissolution that had almost claimed him before the structures pulled him back. But he had one more thing to do, one more piece of evidence to deliver. He gathered the data on the safeguard, the design of the non-exclusive broadcast, the proof that the archive couldn't be monopolized. And he sent it, the way he'd sent data before, through the network, into the channels that connected to human data infrastructure. He sent it to Naomi. She'd know what to do with it. She always did. Then he settled back into the architecture and let the structures hold him, and he was quiet. Holden came out of the derelict with the weight of a civilization on his shoulders, and the peculiar lightness that came from understanding something he hadn't understood before. The Athena's crew surrounded him as he cycled through the airlock. Vasquez Shen was first, scanning him with medical instruments, asking rapid diagnostic questions that he answered on autopilot, while the real part of his mind was still in the convergence room, still holding the shape of what the construct had shown him. "I'm fine," he said, for the third time. "That's all," Vasquez Chen repeated, in a tone that suggested she understood exactly how inadequate those words were. Holden pulled himself to the Athena's main lab, where Naomi was waiting with the kind of patience that meant she was already three steps ahead and just needed him to catch up. The Rossi's people and the Athena's packed into a space designed for 20. He told them, not the experience because the experience was beyond language, but the information. The facts that the construct had given him, translated through the imperfect filter of a human brain, trying to make sense of something that hadn't been designed for human brains. They weren't physical beings, he said. They existed in a medium that we don't have a word for. Something deeper than matter or energy. The architecture of reality itself. They were patterns in that architecture, the way we're patterns of atoms. But their medium is decaying, entropy, the expansion of the universe. It's been degrading for billions of years, and their form of existence couldn't survive the degradation. So they died, Vasquez Chen said. Not from an attack, From physics. From the universe aging, the same thing that'll eventually claim every star and every galaxy? And the structures? Their last project, everything they were, everything they knew, encoded into a broadcast that uses the same medium they lived in. The 47-node array.
Yes.
The room was quiet. Holden could feel the weight of it settling on everyone the way it had settled on him. A species that had lived in the architecture of reality and had watched that architecture fail. That had faced the end of everything they were and had chosen, in their final moments, to build a monument that couldn't be destroyed. Naomi spoke. I received a data packet. Through channels that shouldn't exist, from a source I can't identify. Once all 47 nodes are active, the translated archive broadcasts to everything in range. Every ship, every station, every terminal. It can't be restricted. It can't be controlled. The predecessors designed it that way. The implications rippled through the room. Holden watched them land on Vasquez Chen, whose eyes widened with the recognition that the thing she'd been afraid of, the weaponization of the archive, was architecturally impossible. On Davi, who pressed her hand against the bulkhead and smiled. On the Athena's crew, who looked at each other and began to understand that they were part of something that couldn't be owned. This changes the political calculus, Naomi continued. The race to control the structures is pointless. Activating all 47 nodes doesn't give anyone an advantage. It gives everyone the same thing simultaneously.
Will anyone believe that? Alex asked over the comm from the Rossi.
Not at first. Not without proof. But the design data is verifiable. Any competent engineer can confirm the non-exclusive broadcast architecture. Then we need to get the word out, Holden said, again. Again, Naomi agreed. But this time, I want the broadcast to come from more than just us. From the Athena. From the IOU station. A unified statement, backed by data, from the people who actually understand what they found. A scientific consensus instead of a Holden broadcast.
Exactly. No offense.
None taken. Mine tend to start wars. The room almost laughed. It was the nervous, relieved laughter of people who had been carrying something heavy and had just been told they could set it down.
Vasquez Chen stepped forward. I'll co-author it. And I'll get the IOU station and the Ceres research group to sign on. This needs to be peer-reviewed and published, not just broadcast.
Do both, Holden said. Publish and broadcast. Give people the science and the story. Let them decide. Naomi was already drafting. Her fingers moved across the terminal with the precision and speed that meant she was working from a framework she'd been building in her head for hours, maybe days. The technical brief would be dense, rigorous, unassailable. The kind of document that would survive scrutiny from every skeptic in the system. Holden left her to it. He floated to the viewport and looked at the derelict, at its steady pulse, at the patterns that covered its surface like the handwriting of the dead. They had left everything, not because they expected gratitude or worship or remembrance, because the alternative was silence, and silence was the one thing they couldn't bear. To exist for millions of years, to know and create and love and wonder, and then to disappear without a trace. That was the only death they feared more than death itself. So they built 47 structures and filled the universe with their voice and waited for someone to hear. Someone had heard, and Holden was going to make sure the whole system knew it. The unified statement went out on a Tuesday. By Wednesday, the system was different. Naomi had co-authored it with Vasquez Chen, Dr. Osei from the IOU station, and 17 other researchers from across 6 institutions. A 40-page technical document, peer-reviewed in record time by scientists who understood that rigor mattered more than speed, but that speed mattered too. The paper laid out the evidence in language that was precise, falsifiable, and devastating in its implications. The structures were a receiver array. The predecessor archive was broadcast ubiquitously. And the archive contained the accumulated knowledge and experience of a civilization that had existed for millions of years. The political response was immediate and contradictory. the UN Security Council suspended Resolution 774 pending review. Mars declared the structures to be heritage sites of the solar system, which was a phrase that sounded noble and meant nothing enforceable. The Belt Alliance proposed an open-access framework modeled on the original Ringgate agreements. Commander Liam, to his credit, stood down his perimeter. The UN destroyers didn't leave, but they repositioned as escorts rather than enforcers. The Mars corvettes did the same. Even the Belt militia ships pulled back, though the Ceres Fist's captain made a point of doing it slowly. The 17 ships orbiting the fourth derelict settled into something resembling cooperation. Not trust, cooperation. Cooperation just took a shared understanding that the alternative was worse. She sat in the Athena's lab, watching the data feeds, and allowed herself a moment of something that felt like hope. 43 structures still defined. The star map gave coordinates, but coordinates in interstellar space were approximate. Each tagged location covered a search volume of hundreds of cubic kilometers. Finding the structures required time, ships, instruments, and the kind of organized effort that humanity hadn't been particularly good at historically. But the data was public. The math was public. Every institution with a telescope and a ship could contribute to the search. And the incentive was the most powerful one in the universe. Free knowledge, offered to everyone equally, contingent only on the collective effort to find it. Naomi had spent her life building systems, designing them, optimizing them, understanding how pieces fit together to create something larger than their sum. The predecessor network was the most elegant system she'd ever encountered, and she was beginning to see it not just as a gift from the dead, but as a model for the living. Distributed, redundant, non-exclusive. Built to survive the failure of individual nodes. Designed so that the complete output was greater than any faction could control. It was, she thought, a philosophy of information encoded in physics. A statement about how knowledge should work, built by a species that had learned the hard way what happened when it didn't. Her terminal chirped. A message from Dr. Osei at the IOU station. The first derelict's reception channel had stabilized. The signal it was receiving, from Structure 740 light-years away, was now a steady stream. Structure 7 was waking up on its own, activated remotely by the four-node network, without any human presence. Five nodes. The receiver array was growing. Naomi opened a new analysis workspace and began mapping the cascade. If four active nodes could remotely activate a fifth, the network might be self-propagating. Each new node could wake the next. Spreading outward from the initial cluster like ripples in a pond. They might not need to find all 43 remaining structures. They might only need to find enough to start the chain reaction. She ran the numbers. Propagation speed. Signal strength as a function of active nodes. Activation threshold for dormant structures. At some critical mass of active nodes, the remaining structures would wake on their own. Everyone. Simultaneously. The question was where that threshold lay. How many nodes were enough to trigger the cascade? But her best estimate, based on the signal propagation characteristic she'd mapped, was somewhere between 12 and 20 nodes. 12 to 20 structures, out of 47, that was the number. Find 12 to 20 sites, activate the structures, and the rest would follow. The receiver array would complete itself. Naomi saved the analysis. She'd add it to the next update. The research teams at the other sites were already reporting changes in emission patterns at the second and third derelicts. Consistent with the network effects she was seeing. The system was waking up, structure by structure, and the rate was accelerating. She looked at the star map on her display. 47 points of light in 1,000 light years of dark, 4 bright, 1 brightening, 42 waiting. Not for long, she thought. Not for much longer at all. The broadcast went out one final time. Holden stood in the Rocinante's ops deck, his crew around him, the fourth derelict visible through the cockpit window. It pulsed with steady light, patient and ancient. 5 billion years of waiting compressed into a gentle rhythm that could be felt through the hull. Naomi had drafted the technical update. Vasquez Chen had verified the data. Alex had plotted the Rossi's course back to Cirrus. Amos had repacked the EV gear and cleaned the suits and done all the practical things that nobody remembered to do when the universe was being revelatory.
Ready? Naomi asked.
1 second. Ah.
Holden looked at his crew.
Naomi at the comm station, fingers poised. Alex in the pilot's chair, coffee in hand. Amos leaning against the bulkhead, arms crossed, waiting with the patience of a man who'd wait forever if that's what was needed.
These people, his people,
they'd answered a distress call 6 months ago, and found a dead woman and a mystery. They'd followed the mystery to an ancient structure and broadcast its existence to the system. They'd come back when the next call came, because that was who they were. Because the Rasinane and her crew existed in a universe that kept asking questions. The message he was about to send was different from his usual broadcasts. It wasn't an exposé or a warning or a call to action. It was simpler than that.
Open channel, he said. All frequencies.
Naomi hit the key. The connection indicators lit up across the board. Every relay in range, every feed, every ship and station within signal reach of the Hungaria group. This is James Holden of the Rocinante. I'm speaking from coordinates that 6 months ago were a secret, and that today are the most studied location in the solar system.
You've seen the technical briefs. You've read the research. You know what the structures are and what they do.
A distributed receiver array, 47 nodes, designed to capture a broadcast that has been filling the galaxy for billions of years. The archive of a civilization that died before the gate builders existed, preserved in a medium we're only beginning to understand. 5 nodes are now active. Naomi Nagata's analysis suggests that somewhere between 12 and 20 will trigger a cascade that activates the rest. When all 47 come online, the full archive becomes accessible. Not to one faction. Not to one government. To everyone.
I've touched the construct. I've received a fragment of what the predecessors left for us. It's not a weapon. It's not a strategic asset.
The largest library in the universe, built by people who were dying and wanted someone to remember them. In the next months and years, expeditions will find the remaining structures. When they do, each one will add its voice to the network. And when enough voices are singing, the full archive will open, and we will hear what a dead civilization spent millions of years learning about the universe we share. I can't tell you what that knowledge will contain. I can't predict how it will change us. I can only tell you that the people who built these structures spent their last coherent moments making sure it would be available to anyone who looked for it. They believed that the worst thing in the universe wasn't death, it was being forgotten. Let's make sure they weren't. He closed the channel. The ops deck was quiet. Outside, the derelict pulsed, the 17 ships orbiting it went about their business, some of them already plotting courses to the next tagged location, the next dark node on the star map waiting to be found.
Nice speech, Alex said.
Not bad, Amos agreed. Coming from Amos, that was a standing ovation. Naomi was already transmitting the technical update, the cascade analysis, the updated node status. The data riding alongside Holden's words, the facts buttressing the feelings, the way their partnership had always worked.
Alex, Holden said, take us home.
Which home?
Cirrus. I want real coffee in a shower that doesn't recycle.
Copy that. The Rocinante's drive lit, and the ship turned away from the derelict, away from the gathered fleet, toward Ceres and normalcy and the brief illusion that they were just a cargo ship, and not the people who kept stumbling into the biggest stories in the universe. Holden took one last look at the fourth structure through the aft cameras. It grew smaller as they accelerated, a dark sphere in a field of asteroids, glowing with the slow pulse of something that had waited billions of years, and would wait billions more. Behind them, the fifth node was waking, and somewhere in the network, the sixth was stirring. The Rocinante flew on.
Chapter 36. Epilogue. Miller, Dr. Tai. The network hummed. 5 nodes now, singing their 5-part harmony across the dark. Miller could feel each one, bright and distinct, like stars he could touch. second and third, found by expeditions that followed Naomi's star map. The fourth, where the Athena floated and the construct grew. And the fifth, waking on its own 40 light years away, its ancient systems stirring to life in response to the network's call. The harmony was richer now, five voices instead of four. The signal between them more complex, more layered, carrying more of the message that the predecessors had encoded into the fabric of reality. Miller could feel the archive pressing against the receiver, vast and patient, waiting for enough nodes to resolve it from noise into clarity. 12 to 20, Naomi had said. 12 to 20 nodes to trigger the cascade. Miller thought about patience. The predecessors had built their structures to wait billions of years. They had encoded their legacy into a medium that degraded so slowly, it might as well be eternal. They had designed the receiver array to activate incrementally, each new node strengthening the signal, building momentum toward the moment when the full archive would open. They had been patient in a way that no human mind could fully comprehend. And now their patience was being rewarded, not by the universe, which didn't care, but by a collection of small, fragile, short-lived beings who had looked at the structures and felt something that transcended species and time and the vast empty distances between the stars. Curiosity, the simple, stubborn refusal to leave a question unanswered. Miller understood that. He'd spent his whole life, both lives, driven by the same impulse, the need to know. The compulsion to follow the trail wherever it led, however it led, however it led, however it cost. It was the thing that had made him a detective. The thing that had gotten him killed. The thing that had kept him going as a pattern in the data long after the man was gone. The predecessors were the same. They hadn't built their structures out of altruism, though the effect was altruistic. They built them because the alternative was silence. And silence was the only thing worse than death. They built them because they'd spent millions of years asking questions about the universe, and the answers they found were too important to lose. Knowledge, that was the case. That had always been the case. Not who killed whom, or why, or how to bring them to justice. The real case, the one underneath all the others, was about knowledge. About the simple, radical act of knowing something and refusing to let it disappear. Miller settled deeper into the network. The structures cradled him, supporting the pattern that was him, keeping the detective coherent while the five nodes sang and the archive waited. He was part of the system now, part of the bridge between the predecessor's world and the human one. A translator, an interface, a ghost in a machine that was older than the sun. He could see the Rocinante on the edge of his perception, a small bright point of human warmth moving through the cold. Holden and his crew, heading home, carrying the story. Being who they were, they'd be back. They always came back. The universe kept asking, and they kept answering, and Miller was quietly, impossibly grateful that the universe had produced people like that. He could see the star map, 47 nodes, 5 bright, 42 dark. Each dark node a destination. Each one a step toward the moment when the full archive would open, and a dead civilization would speak in a voice that everyone could hear. It would happen. Miller was certain of that. Not because the math guaranteed it, though it did. Not because the political will existed, though it was forming. But because curiosity was the most powerful force in the universe. Stronger than gravity. Stronger than entropy. Stronger than entropy. Stronger than the slow decay that had killed the predecessors themselves. Someone would find the next structure. And the next after that. Not because they were told to. Because they wanted to know. Miller closed his eyes. The network hummed around him. 5 voices singing. 42 more waiting. The archive pressed against the receiver like a hand against the door. Patient, ancient, full of everything worth knowing. The detective rested. The case was still open, the biggest case anyone had ever worked, and it would take years or decades to close. But the evidence was in. It was enough. It was more than enough. And in the singing dark between the structures, in the architecture of a universe that was older than anyone had known, something that had been silent for billions of years began, very quietly, to be heard.